Hannibal Lokumbe, so glad to have you in Philadelphia again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And it's exciting to have you here for your new work, One Land, One River, One People. And you're doing a whole host of things in the community. For you, why is music so connected with the community?
Because it is the community, and it belongs. The music is the for the people. It's theirs. It's like trying to say you own the land. You don't own the land. You just get to experience it for a while. We don't own anything, really, except the miracle of experiencing life, being alive. The other is a misnomer. It's like fool's gold to think you own something. All you own is a chance to fellowship with people, with humanity, that's all. But speaking of excitement, I've gone through 3 sticks of deodorant in the past 4 days. I'm so excited. I wake up in the middle of the night just sweating, you know. So I have to take a shower and use more deodorant, you know. It's unbelievable. Maybe I have to get some stronger, like my 17-year-old son's Axe deodorant, but it smells too bad, you know. But I'm excited. I've never used that much deodorant in such a short period of time. I wake up in the middle of the night just smiling when I think of what is to come and what has already transpired, you know, with this work. It's the answer to my prayer. It's the answer that I sent out into the universe to allow me to say to the people, you're not who society say you are. You're very remarkable. Think twice about killing each other. Think twice about hurting each other. Think twice about trying to destroy each other. Because we might have another shot at it. We might not. So you should act as though this is your last shot. You know, it's wonderful to be alive.
And music has been so integral to your life since you were very young. Can you talk a little bit about how music helped you on your journey?
Well, I grew up in a community of people of Jonah. I say people of Jonah, I mean as what people call African Americans. But I grew up in a community of Jonah people, and it was a very closed, very warm, very, very nurturing community. It's that village everyone always speaks of when they say it takes a village to raise a child. Well, I'm a product of that. I was raised by a village. I had many mothers, many fathers, many sisters, cousins, everything. But I noticed that the suffering of the people in the community was relieved when they, believe it or not, began to pick cotton and sing. And when they were in church, and we would have great speakers, but the wigs wouldn't start to jump until the music started, you know. So I realized, yeah, that's the thing, that music, right? The music is it. Something about the music, the power of it. So fortunately, I realized at 13 that music was my path. And whether I had one chicken in the pot or only one red bean in the pot, I was still at peace. Because Duke Ellington told me once, he said, you know, Hannibal, life, 95% of life is knowing what you're to do in life. That's 95% of living, knowing what you want to do. And I was fortunate very early to know why I was born and what my purpose was.
And you started playing trumpet?
Ooh, I should be practicing now, but I mean, you know, it's an unending love affair. Dizzy Gillespie told me one time, I think he was about 64. He said, Hannibal, I've never played greater music. I've never heard greater music to play than now. I said, Diz, how can you say that? He said, it's true. And he said, the only way you'll come to understand that is that you live a while. So then that gave me even more incentive to run my miles every day and set up, do sit-ups and, you know, not drink sodas, things like that, you know. So I'm insanely amazed by the miracle of just being, of life. It's just, and more and more, I each day, I say, how could I fall even more in love with life? How could it be possible? and then it happens. You know? And generally around a good meal, being with children, or music, you know.
Were there any pivotal moments for you that changed the direction of your life or changed the direction of your music?
Well, I think the death of Medgar Evers really had a profound impact on me. And that's when I began looking at how I could apply music to address social issues that are of great importance. And actually, my first work wasn't for full orchestra, but just strings, was Children of the Fire. And it was my commentary on war, and the Vietnam War in particular. A powerful piece of music.
And do you have any stories about encounters with children or inmates or anyone who responded to you in a way that helped you go forward?
Well, quite a few. Quite a few, and quite frequently, I'm happy to say. My work in the prisons has been the most rewarding work of my life because I love transformation. And often the inmates, they say they've never had anyone explain certain things that we talk about it when we sit in the circle. And so when many of them get out of prison, they never go back. Some elect to live in the forest for a while rather than resort to committing a crime to get money to try to find a shelter or try and find food. So they'll call, and they said, one brother in particular, he said he was working in this chicken factory, and this poultry factory, and his boss said to him, his boss called him a word that you never call a man that's in prison, and that's a bitch. You call him that. And he said, instinctively, he thought to just really try and destroy the guy physically. But then he recalled the first principle of the Music Liberation Orchestra, the organization I created. And the first principle of the Music Liberation Orchestra is to renounce violence. And secondly, to acknowledge the presence of the divine. Third, to keep a journal for yourself and your children. And fourth, to fall in love with forgiveness. So he said he folded his smock and put it in the hands of his supervisor and said, thank you for everything. 2 weeks later, he got a job installing telephone poles in the ground, and now he's the supervisor. But he said that clicked in his mind, renounce violence, because he was about to physically attack this guy.
And he was part of the Music Liberation Orchestra?
Yes,
what is that?
Hallelujah. The Music Liberation Orchestra is the name of the organization I formed where I go into prisons around the country and teach restoration, offer restoration to inmates. We have a chapter here, Holmesburg Prison, that I've been going to for some years now, and we're going to perform a string quartet I wrote on Tuesday there, Fannie Lou Hamer, and we're going to do Mendelssohn as well. And I have a chapter and two chapters in Texas, a chapter in New Orleans at the Orleans Parish Prison, and one in Minneapolis. So moments before I take my last breath, my wish is that I have them all over the country.
That's wonderful. Do the inmates, are they playing music or just listening to music or both?
Some do. You don't. It's not mandatory that you're a musician to be in the MLO. Many are not. Some are physicians, you know, but it doesn't matter. But I just use music because that's what saved me. That's the metaphor I use to help them, you know. Because if I didn't have the music, I could very well be in a cage too, like them. Because it helped me to deal with violence, the violence that this society really was pushing me towards. Every time I look around, a policeman is stopping me, and every time I go in a store, I get followed. It's a lot. The layers of that kind of treatment as a human being to another human being can create a monster.
And is it possible to describe how music soothes or channels that into something positive, all those feelings?
Absolutely. Look at the blues. The blues didn't come from people living in a penthouse or having their bills paid, nor did the spirituals. Didn't come from that. Came from struggle, came from suffering. So always the music has been sacred to me because I'm a witness as to what it can do for people and what it can do for me, certainly.
So this piece, One Land, One River, One People, is kind of a culmination of what you've been working on.
It's a culmination of my life, yes, absolutely. Because I wanted to, after dealing with the physicality of my existence, I wanted to get to the kernel of what I feel life is about, and that's our spirituality. People don't kill in the name of spirituality. They do kill in the name of religion.
And spirituality reaches across all religions.
Absolutely. It's that tone that's 4 miles above the earth.
That's terrific. Is there anything else you want to explain about this piece? I wish I would want to hear it so much.
Me too. I've only heard it in my head, but I want to hear it. I mean, I've been to a few choir rehearsals and found myself really not needed at all. And so I start to pace, and then I have to use more deodorant. You know, at this point, I'm just a fly on the wall. You know, I'm secondhand. You know, so, and that's okay. But
there are three choirs.
Three choirs.
And how many musicians?
Full orchestra and soprano singing the part of Alma, and a tenor singing the part of Nomo. I had a female sing the part of Alma, which is God, for a number of reasons. And I wanted to pay homage to the phenomenon called woman. I wanted to pay homage to that. So I said, once my daughter told me, which shocked me, she said in her school, they said to her that there were no women angels. And it terrified me. And I said, well, do you believe that? She said, no, Dad. She said, but a lot of kids, I think they do. I said, well, okay, I'll see what I can do to work on that. And so in my last piece, Kunanamui, which is the name of God in my great-grandfather's language, Pele, I had Kunanamui be a woman. I had God play the part of a woman, you know. And in my piece, God, Mississippi, and a Man Called Evans, I did the same. So I did that. That was kind of like contrived. That was a very distinct decision to do that. I like for children, girls especially, to see that woman, that God is in the image of a woman. It's beautiful.
It sounds as if there are many, many ways in which this piece will challenge expectations and challenge things that we think we know.
I hope so, because it does it to me. Initially, I thought One Land meant Africa, but then my great-great-grandmother taught me that it meant the physicality of humanity. I thought One River meant the Nile. She said, no, that's the blood of humanity. And One People meant the Africans. She says, no, that's the spirituality of humanity. So it's important to know how to get out of the way of what you think you know.
Has she commented on your work recently?
Oh, she smiles. When it's okay, she just comes and she stands and she smiles, you know. It's a powerful thing. And always I feel her spirit when the music comes, you know. That's the affirmation.
Thank you so much, Hannibal Lokumbe.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Take care. All right.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.